part of Dennis's mind whispered distractedly. But inside his head, that distracted little whisper was like a scream. Oh, I must run. He has died. He has died in his sleep, and I am following a walking corpse. But then he heard the voice of his Da, his own dear dead Da, whispering, "If the time ever comes to do your first master a service, Dennis, you mustn't hesitate." A voice deeper than either told him that the time for that service had come. And Dennis, a lowly servant boy who had changed a kingdom once by discovering a burning mouse, perhaps changed it again by holding his place in spite of the terror which froze his bones and pushed his heart into his throat. In a strange, deep voice that was nothing at all like his usual voice, but to Dennis that voice sounded weirdly familiar, Thomas said, "Fourth stone up from the one at the bottom with the chip in it. Press it, quick!" The habit of obedience was so ingrained in Dennis that he had actually begun to move forward before realizing that Thomas, in his dream, had commanded himself in the voice of another. Thomas pushed the stone before Dennis could move more than a single step. It slid in perhaps 3 inches. There was a click. Dennis's jaw dropped as part of the wall swung inward. Thomas pushed it further, and Dennis saw there was a huge secret door here. Secret doors made him think of secret panels, and secret panels made him think of burning mice. Again he felt an urge to run and fought it down. Thomas went in. For a moment he was only a glimmering nightshirt in the dark, a nightshirt with no one inside it. Then the stone wall closed again. The illusion was perfect. Dennis stood there, shifting from one cold bare foot to the other cold bare foot. What should he do now? Again it was his Da's voice he seemed to hear, impatient now, brooking no refusal. "Follow, you paltry boy. Follow and be quick. This is the moment. Follow." But Da, the dark... He seemed to feel a stinging slap, and Dennis thought hysterically, "Even when you're dead, you got a strong right hand, Da. All right, I'm going." He counted up 4 from the chipped stone and pushed. The door swung about 4 inches inward on darkness. There was a tiny clittering sound in the awesome silence of the corridor, a sound like mice made of stone. After a moment, Dennis realized that sound was his own teeth chattering together. "Oh, Da, I'm so scared," he mourned. And then followed King Thomas into the darkness. 79. 50 miles away, rolled into 5 blankets against the bitter cold and the roaring wind, Flag cried out in his sleep at the precise moment Dennis followed the king into the secret passageway. On a knoll not far distant, wolves howled in unison with that cry. The soldier sleeping nearest Flag on the left died instantly of a heart attack, dreaming that a great lion had come to gobble him up. The soldier sleeping on Flag's right woke up in the morning to discover he was blind. Worlds sometimes shudder and turn inside their axes, and this was such a time. Flag felt it, but did not grasp it. The salvation of all that is good is only this. At times of great import, evil beings sometimes fall strangely blind. When the king's magician awoke in the morning, he knew that he had had a bad dream, probably from his own long-forgotten past, but he did not remember what it had been. 80. The darkness inside the secret passage was utter and complete, the air still and dry. In it, coming from somewhere ahead, Dennis heard a terrible, desolate sound. The king was weeping. At that sound, some of Dennis's fear left him. He felt a great wonder and a great pity for Thomas, who always seemed so unhappy, and who had grown fat and pimply as king. Often he was pallid and shaky-handed from too much wine the night before, and his breath was usually bad. Already Thomas's legs were beginning to bow, and unless Flag was with him, he had a tendency to walk with his head down and his hair hanging in his face. Dennis felt his way forward, his hands held out in front of him. The sound of weeping grew closer in the dark, and then suddenly the dark was no longer complete. He heard a faint sliding noise, and then he could see Thomas faintly. He was standing at the end of the corridor, and faint amber light was coming in from two small holes in the dark. To Dennis, those holes looked strangely like floating eyes. Just as Dennis began to believe that he would be all right, that he would probably survive this strange night walk, Thomas shrieked. He shrieked so loudly it seemed that his vocal cords must split open. The strength ran out of Dennis's legs, and he fell to his knees, hands clapped over his mouth to stop his own screams. And now it seemed to him that this secret way was filled with ghosts. Ghosts like strange flapping bats that might at any moment snare themselves in his hair. Oh, yes, the place seemed filled with the unquiet dead to Dennis. And perhaps it was. Perhaps it was. He almost swooned. Almost, but not quite. Somewhere below him, he heard barking dogs and realized they were above the old king's kennels. The few of Roland's dogs still alive had never been moved outside again. They were the only living beings, besides Dennis himself, that had heard those wild shrieks. But the dogs were real, not ghosts. And Dennis held on to that thought the way a drowning man might hold on to a floating mast. A moment or two later, he realized that Thomas was not just shrieking. He was crying out words. At first, Dennis could make out only a single phrase, howled out again and again. "Don't drink the wine! Don't drink the wine! Don't drink the wine!" 81. 3 nights later, a light knock came at the closed sitting room door of a farm and one of the inner baronies, a farm quite close to where the Stodd family had lived not so long ago. "Come," Anders Pena growled. "And it better be damned good, Arlen." Arlen had aged in the years since Beeson had appeared at Pena's door with Peter's note. The changes in him, however, were slight when compared with the changes in Pena. The former Judge General's hair was almost all gone. His spareness of frame had become gauntness. The loss of hair and weight were very little, however, when compared with the changes in his face. Formerly, he had been stern. Now he was grim. Dark brown hollows floated below his eyes. The stamp of despair was clear on his face, and there was good reason for this. He had seen things he had spent his life defending brought to ruin. And this ruin had been accomplished with shocking ease and in a shockingly brief period of time. Oh, I suppose all men of intelligence know how fragile such things as law and justice and civilization really are, but it's not a thing they think of willingly, because it disturbs one's rest and plays hob with one's appetite. Seeing his life's work knocked casually apart like a child's tower of blocks was bad enough, but there was another thing which had haunted Pena these last 4 years, something that was even worse. This was the knowledge that Flagg had not achieved all the dark changes in Delane alone. Pena had helped him. For who else had seen Peter brought to a trial which was perhaps too speedy? Who else had been so convinced of Peter's guilt, and not so much by the evidence as by a young boy's shocked tears? Since the day Peter had been led to the top of the Needle, the chopping block in the plaza of the Needle had been stained a sinister rusty color. Not even the hardest rain could wash it clean, and Pena thought he could detect that sinister red stain spreading out from the block, spreading out to cover the plaza, the market streets, the alleys. In his troubled dreams, Pena saw rills of fresh blood washing in bright, accusing threads between the cobblestones and running down the gutters and streamlets. He saw the redans of Castle Delane gleaming bloody in the sun. He saw the carp in the moat, floating belly up, poisoned by the blood which poured out of the sewers in floods, and which rose from the springs and the earth itself. He saw the blood rising everywhere, staining the fields and forests. In these unhappy dreams, even the sun began to look like a bloodshot, dying eye. Flagg had let him live. In the mead houses, people whispered behind their hands that he had reached an agreement with the magician, that he had perhaps given Flagg the names of certain traitors, or that perhaps Pena had something on Flagg, some secret that would come out if Pena died suddenly, This was, of course, ridiculous. Flagg was not a man to be threatened, not by Pena, not by anyone. There were no secrets. There had been no agreements or deals. Flagg had simply let him live. And Pena knew why. Dead, he would perhaps have been at peace. Alive, he was left to twist on the rack of his own bad conscience. He was left to watch the terrible changes Flagg had wrought on Delane. "Well?" he asked irritably. "What is it, Arlen?" "A boy has come, my lord. He says he must see you." "Send him away," Pena said moodily. He reflected that even a year ago he would have heard a knock at the front door, but it seemed that he became more deaf with every passing day. "I see no one after 9, you know that. Much has changed, but not that." Arlen cleared his throat. "I know the boy. It is Dennis, son of Brandon. It is the king's butler who calls." Pena stared at Arlen, hardly believing what he had heard. Perhaps he was growing deaf even faster than he had thought. He asked Arlen to repeat, and it came out sounding just the same. "I'll see him. Send him in." "Very good, my lord." Arlen turned to leave. The similarity to the night Beeson had come with Peter's note, even down to the cold wind screaming outside, came strongly to Pena now. "Arlen," he called. Arlen turned back. "My lord?" The right corner of Pena's mouth quirked the smallest bit. "Are you quite sure it's not a dwarf boy?" "Quite sure, my lord," Arlen replied, and the left corner of his own mouth twitched the tiniest bit. "There are no dwarves left in the known world, or so my mother told me. Obviously she was a woman of good sense and clear discernment, dedicated to raising her son properly and not to be held responsible for any inherent flaws in the material she had to work with. Bring the boy here directly." "Yes, my lord." The door closed. Pena looked into his fire again and rubbed his old arthritis-crippled hands together in a gesture of unaccustomed agitation. Thomas's butler. Here. Now. Why? But there was no sense in speculating. The door would open in a moment, and the answer would come walking through it, in the form of a man-boy who would be shaking with the cold, perhaps even frostbitten. Dennis would have found it a good deal easier to reach Pena if Pena had still been at his fine house in the castle city, but his house had been sold from beneath him for unpaid taxes following his resignation. Only the few hundred guilders he had put away over the course of 40 years had allowed him to buy this small, drafty farmhouse and continue to pay Beeson. It was technically in the inner baronies, but he was still many miles west of the castle, and the weather had been very cold. In the hallway beyond the door, he heard the murmur of approaching voices. Now the answer would come through the door. Suddenly, that absurd feeling, that feeling of hope, like a ray of strong light shining in a dark cave, came back to him. "Now the answer will come through the door," he thought. And for a moment he found himself believing that was really true. As he drew his favorite pipe from the rack beside him, Anders Pena saw that his hands were trembling. 82. The boy was really a man, but Arlen's use of the word was not unjustified, at least not on this night. He was cold, Pena saw, but he also knew that the cold alone does not make anyone shudder as Dennis was shuddering. "Dennis," Pena said, sitting forward sharply, and ignoring the twinge in his back the sudden movement had caused. "Has something happened to the king?" Dreadful images, awful possibilities, suddenly filled Pena's old head. The king dead, either from too much wine, or possibly by his own hand. Everyone in Delane knew that the young king was deeply moody. "No, that is, yes, but no, not the way you mean. The way I think you mean." "Come in here close to the fire," Pena snapped. "Arlen, don't just stand there gawking. Get a blanket. Get two. Wrap this boy up before he shakes himself to death like a bugger lug bug. Yes, my lord, Arlen said. He had never gawked in his life. He knew it, and Pena did too. But he recognized the gravity of this situation and left quickly. He stripped the two blankets from his own bed. The only other two in this glorified peasant's hut were the ones on Pena's, and brought them back. He took them to where Dennis crouched as close to the fire as he could without bursting into flames. The deep frost, which had covered his hair, had begun to melt and run down his cheeks like tears. Dennis wrapped himself in the blankets. Now, tea. Strong tea. A cup for me, a pot for the boy.
My lord, we only have half a canister left in the whole...
Bugger how much we have left. A cup for me, a pot for the boy, he considered. And make a cup for yourself, Harlan, and then come in here and listen.
My lord?
Even all of his breeding could not keep Arlen from looking frankly astounded at this. Damn, Pena roared. Would you have me believe you're as deaf as I've become? Get about it.
Yes, my lord,
Arlen said, and went to brew the last tea in the house. 83. Pena had not forgotten everything he had ever known about the fine art of questioning. In point of fact, he had forgotten damned little of that, or anything else. He had had long sleepless nights when he wished that he could forget some things. While Arlen made the tea, Pena went about the task of putting this frightened, no, this terrified, young man at his ease. He asked after Dennis's mom. He asked if the drainage problems which had so plagued the castle of late had improved. He asked Dennis's opinion on the spring plantings. He steered clear of any and all subjects which might be dangerous. And little by little, as he warmed, Dennis calmed. When Arlen served the tea, hot and strong and steaming, Dennis slurped half the cup at a gulp, grimaced, then slurped the rest. Impassive as ever, Arlen poured more. "Easy, my lad," Pena said, lighting his pipe at last. "Easy is the word for hot tea and skittish horses. Cold. Thought I was going to freeze coming out here." "You walked?" Pena was unable to conceal his surprise.
"Yes. Had my mother leave word with the lesser servants that I was home with the grip. That'll hold all for a few days, it being so catching this time of year." Or should do. Walked. Whole way. Didn't dare ask a ride. Didn't want to be remembered. Didn't know it was quite this far. If I'd known, I might have taken a ride after all. I left at 3 o'clock.
He struggled, his throat working, and then burst out.
And I'm not going back. Not ever. I seen the way he looks at me since he come back. Narrow and on the side, his eyes all dark. He never used to look at me that way. Never used to look at me at all. He knows I seen something. Knows I heard something. He don't know what, but he knows there's something. He hears it in my head, like I'd hear the bell ringing out from the church of the great gods. If I stay, he'll get it out of me. I know he will.
Pena stared at the boy under furrowed brows, trying to sort out this amazing flood of declaration. Tears were standing in Dennis's eyes.
I mean...
Softly, Dennis, Pena said. His voice was mild, but his eyes were not.
I know who you mean. Best not to speak his name aloud.
Dennis looked at him with dumb, simple gratitude.
You'd better tell me what you came to say, Pena told him.
Yes. Yes, all right.
Dennis hesitated for a moment, trying to get himself under control and to arrange his thoughts. Pena waited impassively, trying to control his rising excitement.
You see, Dennis began at last, 3 nights ago, Thomas called me to come and stay with him, as he sometimes does, and at midnight, or sometime thereabouts...
84. Dennis told what you have already heard, and to his credit, he did not try to lie about his own terror or gloss it over. As he spoke, the wind whined outside, and as the fire burned low, Pena's eyes burned hotter and hotter.
Here, he thought, were worse things than he ever could have imagined. Not only had Peter poisoned the king, Thomas had seen it happen. No wonder the boy king was so often moody and depressed. Perhaps the rumors that passed in the mead houses, rumors that had Thomas more than half mad already, were not so far-fetched as Pena had thought. But as Dennis paused to drink more tea, Arlen refilled his cup from the bitter lees of the pot, Pena drew back from that idea. If Thomas had witnessed Peter poisoning Roland, why was Dennis here now, and in such deadly terror of Flag? You heard more, Pena said. Aye, my lord judge general, Dennis said. Thomas. He raved quite some time. We were closed up in the dark together long. Dennis struggled to be clearer, but found no words to convey the horror of that closed-in passageway, with Thomas shrieking in the darkness before him, and the dead king's few surviving dogs barking below them. No words to describe the smell of the place, a smell of secrets which had gone rancid like milk spilled in the dark. No words to tell of his growing fear that Thomas had gone mad while in the grip of his dream. He had screamed the name of the king's magician over and over again, had begged the king to look deep into the goblet and see the mouse that simultaneously burned and drowned in the wine. "Why do you stare at me so?" he had shrieked. And then, "I brought you a glass of wine, my king, to show you that I, too, love you." And finally he had shrieked out words that Peter himself would have recognized, words better than 400 years old. "'Twas Flag! Flag! "'Twas Flag!" Dennis reached for his cup, got it halfway to his mouth, and then dropped it. The cup shattered on the hearthstones. The three of them looked at the shards of crockery. "'And then?' Pena asked, in a deceptively gentle voice. "'Nothing for a long, long time,' Dennis said in a halting voice. "'My eyes had gotten used to the darkness.' And I could see him a little. He was asleep. Asleep at those two little holes, with his chin on his breast and his eyes closed. And he remained so for how long? My lord, I know not. The dogs had all quieted again, and perhaps I dozed a bit yourself? I think it is likely, Dennis. Then later he seemed to wake. His eyes opened at any rate. He closed the little panels, and all was dark again. I heard him moving, and I drew my legs back so he would not trip over them. His nightshirt, it brushed my face. Dennis grimaced as he remembered a feeling like cobwebs drawn in a whisper over his left cheek. I followed him. He let himself out. I followed still. He closed the door so that it looked like only plain stone wall again. He went back to his apartments, and I followed him. "Did you meet anyone?" Pena rapped so sharply that Dennis jumped. "Anyone at all?" "No. No, my lord judge general. No one at all." "Ah." Pena relaxed. "That is very well. And did anything else happen that night?" "No, my lord. He went to bed and slept like a dead man." Dennis hesitated and then added, "I didn't sleep a wink, meself, and haven't slept many since, either." "And in the morning he remembered nothing?" Pena grunted. He steepled his fingers and looked at the dying fire through the little finger building he had built. "And did you go back to that passageway?" Curiously, Dennis asked. "Would you have gone back, my lord?" "Yes," Pena said dryly. "The question is, did you?"
"I did."
"Of course you did. Were you seen?"
"No.
A chambermaid passed me in the hallway. The laundry is down that way, I think. I smelled lye soap, like my mum uses. When she was gone, I counted up 4 from the chipped stone and went in." "To see what Thomas had seen?"
"Aye, my lord."
"And did you?"
"Aye, my lord."
"And what was it?" Tena asked, knowing. When you slid aside those panels, what did you see?
My lord, I saw King Roland's sitting room, Dennis said.
With all them heads on the walls, and...
My lord?
In spite of the heat of the dying fire, Dennis shuddered.
All of them heads. They seemed to be looking at me.
But there was one head you didn't see, Pena said.
No, my lord, I saw them...
Dennis stopped, eyes widening.
Niner!
He gasped.
The peepholes!
He stopped, his eyes now almost as big as saucers. Silence fell again inside. Outside, the winter wind moaned and whined, and miles away, Peter, rightful king of Delane, hunched over a tiny loom high in the sky and wove a rope almost too fine to see. At last, Pena fetched a deep sigh. Dennis was looking up at him from his place on the hearth pleadingly, hopefully, fearfully. Pena bent forward slowly and touched his shoulder.
You did well to come here, Dennis, son of Brandon. You did well to make a reason for your absence. Quite a plausible one, I think. You'll sleep here with us tonight, in the attic, under the eaves. It'll be cold, but I think you'll sleep better than you have of late. Am I wrong?
Dennis shook his head slowly once, and a tear spilled from his right eye and ran slowly down his cheek.
And your mom knows naught of your reason for needing to be away?
No.
Then the chances are very good she'll not be touched by it. Arlen will take you up. Those are his blankets, I think, and you'll have to return them. But there's straw above, and it's clean. I'll sleep just as well with only one blanket, my lord, Arlen said. Hush! Young blood runs hot even in its sleep, Arlen. Your blood has cooled, and you may want your blankets in case dwarves and trolls come in your dreams.
Arlen smiled a little.
In the morning we'll talk more, Dennis. But you may not see your mom for a bit now. I must tell you that. Although I suspect you already know it might not be healthy for you to go back to Delane, by the look of you.
Dennis tried to smile, but his eyes were shiny with fear.
I had thoughts of more than the grip when I came here, and that's the honest truth. But now I've put your own health in danger as well, haven't I?
Pena smiled dryly.
I'm old, and Arlen is old. The health of the old is never very strong. Sometimes that makes them more careful than they should be. But sometimes it makes them dare much.
Especially, he thought, if they have much to atone for.
We'll speak more in the morning. In the meantime, you deserve your rest. Will you light his way upstairs, Arlen?
Yes, my lord.
And then come back to me.
Yes, my lord.
Arlen led the exhausted Dennis from the room, leaving Anders Pena to brood before his dying fire. 85. When Arlen came back, Pena said quietly,
We have plans to make, Arlen, but perhaps you'll draw us a drop of wine. It would be well to wait until the boy is asleep.
My lord, he was asleep before his head touched the hay he had gathered for his pillow.
Very well. But draw us a drop of wine anyway.
A drop is all there is to draw, Arlen said.
Good. Then we'll not have to set out with big heads tomorrow, will we?
My lord?
Arlen, we leave here tomorrow, the three of us, for the north. I know it, you know it. Dennis says there's grip in Delane, and so there is. One who would grip us if he could, anyway. We go for our health.
Arlen nodded slowly.
It would be a crime to leave that good wine behind us for the taxman. So we'll drink it, and then take ourselves off to bed.
As you say, my lord.
Pena's eyes glinted.
But before you go to bed, you'll mount to the attic and get the blanket you left with the boy against my strict and specific instructions.
Arlen gaped at Pena. Athena mocked his gape with uncanny aptness. And for the first and last time in his service as Pena's butler, Arlen laughed out loud. 86. Pena went to bed but could not sleep. It wasn't the sound of the wind that kept him awake, but the sound of cold laughter coming from inside his own head. When he could stand that laughter no longer, he got up, went back into the sitting room, and sat before the cooling fireplace ashes, his white hair floating in small clouds over his skull. Unaware of his comic look, and if he had been aware of it, he would have been unmindful, he sat wrapped in his blankets like the oldest Indian in the universe, and looked into the dead fire. Pride goes before a fall, his mother had told him when he was a child, and Pena had understood that. Pride's a joke that'll make the stranger inside you laugh sooner or later, she had also told him. And he hadn't understood that, but he did now. Tonight the stranger inside was laughing very hard indeed, too hard for him to be able to sleep, even though the next day was apt to be long and difficult. Pena was fully able to appreciate the irony of his position. All his life he had served the idea of the law. Ideas like prison break and armed rebellion horrified him. They still did, but certain truths had to be faced. That the machinery of revolt had come to exist in Delane, for instance. Pena knew that the nobles who had fled to the north called themselves exiles, but he also knew that they were edging ever closer to calling themselves rebels. And if he were to keep that revolt from happening, he might well have to use the machinery of rebellion to help a prisoner break out of the needle. That was the joke the stranger inside was laughing at, laughing too loudly for sleep to be even a remote possibility. Such actions as the one he was now thinking about went against the grain of his whole life. But he would go ahead anyway, even if it killed him, which it just might. Peter had been falsely imprisoned. Delane's true king was not on the throne, but locked in a cold two-room cell at the top of the needle. And if it took lawless forces to put things right again, so it must be. But the napkins, Pena muttered. His mind circled back to them and back to them. Before we resort to force of arms to free the rightful king and see him enthroned, the business of the napkins should be investigated. He'll have to be asked. Dennis. And the Stodd boy, perhaps. Aye. My lord? Arlen asked from behind him. Are you unwell? Arlen had heard his master rise, as butlers almost always do. I am unwell, Pena agreed gloomily. But it's nothing my physician can fix, Arlen. I'm sorry, my lord. Pena turned to Arlen and fixed his bright, sunken eyes upon the butler. Before we become outlaws, I want to know why he asked for his mother's dollhouse and for napkins with his meals. 87. Go back to the castle? Dennis asked the next morning in a hoarse voice that was almost a whisper. Go back to where he is? If you feel you can't, I'll not press you, Pena said. But you know the castle well enough, I think, to stay out of his way. If, that is, you know a way to get in unnoticed. To be noticed would be bad. You look much too lively for a boy who is supposed to be homesick. The day was cold and bright. The snow on the long rolling hills of the inner baronies threw back a diamond dazzle which made the eyes water before long. I'll probably be snowblind by noon, and it'll serve me right, Pena thought grumpily. The stranger inside seemed to find this prospect hilarious indeed. Castle Delane itself could be seen in the distance, blue and dreaming on the horizon, its walls and towers looking like an illustration in a book of fairy stories. Dennis, however, did not look like a young hero in search of adventure. His eyes were full of fear, and his face bore the expression of a man who has escaped from a den of lions, only to be told he's forgotten his lunch and must go back in and get it,
even though he's lost his appetite. "There might be a way to get in," he said. "But if he smells me, how I get in or where I hide won't matter. If he smells me, he'll run me down." Pena nodded. He did not want to add to the boy's fear, but in this situation, nothing less than the truth could serve them.
"What you say is true."
"But you still ask me to go?"
"If you can, I still ask it."
Over a meager breakfast, Pena had told Dennis what he wanted to know, and had suggested some ways Dennis might go about getting the information. Now Dennis shook his head, not in refusal, but in bewilderment.
"Napkins?" he said.
Pena nodded.
"Napkins."
Dennis's fearful eyes went back to that distant fairy tale castle dreaming on the horizon. When he was dying, "My Da said if I ever saw a chance to do a service for my first master, I must do it. I thought I'd done it coming here. But if I must go back..."
Arlen, who had been busy closing up the house, now joined them.
"Your house key, please, Arlen," Pena said.
Arlen handed it to him, and Pena handed it to Dennis.
"Arlen and I go north to join the..."
Pena hesitated and cleared his throat.
"The exiles," he finished. "I've given you Arlen's key to this house. When we reach their camp, I'll give mine to a fellow you know, if he be there. I think he will be."
"Who's that?" Dennis asked.
"Ben Stodd."
Sunshine broke on Dennis's gloomy face.
"Ben? Ben's with them?"
"I think he may be," Pena said. In truth, he knew perfectly well that the entire Stodd family was with the exiles. He kept his ear firmly to the earth, and his ears had not grown so deaf that he was not able to hear many movements in the kingdom.
"And you'd send him down here?"
"If he'll come, I mean to," Pena replied.
"To do what? My lord, I'm still not clear about that."
"Nor am I," Pena said, looking cross.
He felt more than cross. He felt bewildered.
"I've spent my whole life doing some things because they were logical and not doing others because they were not. I've seen what happens when people act on intuition or for illogical reasons. Sometimes the results are ludicrous and embarrassing. More often, they are simply horrible. But here I am, just the same, behaving like a crack-brained crystal gazer."
"I don't understand you, my lord."
"Neither do I, Dennis, neither do I. Do you know what day this is?"
Dennis blinked at this sudden change in direction, but answered readily enough.
"Yes, Tuesday."
"Tuesday. Good. Now I'm going to ask you a question that my cursed intuition tells me is very important. If you don't know the answer, even if you are not sure, for the gods' sake, say so. Are you ready for the question?"
"Yes, my lord,"
Dennis said. But he wasn't sure he really was. Pena's piercing blue eyes under the wild tangle of his white brows had made him very nervous. The question was apt to be very difficult indeed.
"That is, I think so."
Pena asked his question, and Dennis relaxed. It didn't make much sense to him. It was only more nonsense about the napkins, as far as he could see. But at least he knew the answer and gave it.
"You're sure?"
Pena persisted.
"Yes, my lord."
"Good. Then here is what I want you to do."
Pena spoke to Dennis for some time as the three of them stood in the chilly sunshine in front of the retirement cottage where the old judge would never come again. Dennis listened earnestly, and when Pena demanded that he repeat the instructions back, Dennis was able to do it quite neatly.
"Good," Pena said. "Very, very good.
I'm glad I've pleased you, sir."
"Nothing about this business pleases me, Dennis. Nothing at all. If Ben Stodd is with those unfortunate outcasts in the far forests, I mean to send him away from relative safety and into danger, because he may be of some use to King Peter. I'm sending you back to the castle because my heart tells me there's something about those napkins he asked for,
and the dollhouse. Something. Sometimes I think I almost have it, and then it dances out of my grasp again. He did not ask for those things idly, Dennis. I'd wager my life on that. But I don't know. Pena abruptly slammed his fist down on his leg in frustration. I am putting two fine young men into terrible danger, and my heart tells me I am doing the right thing, but I don't know why. And inside, the man who had in his heart once condemned a boy because of that boy's tears, the stranger laughed and laughed and laughed. 88. The two old men parted from Dennis. They shook hands all around. Then Dennis kissed the judge's ring, which bore the great seal of Delane on its face. Pena had given up his judge general's bench, but had not been able to part with the ring, which to him summed up all the goodness of the law. He knew he had made mistakes from time to time, but he had not allowed them to break his heart. Even over this last and greatest of mistakes, his heart did not break. He knew as well as we in our own world do that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But he also knew that for human beings, good intentions are sometimes all there are. Angels may be safe from damnation, but human beings are less fortunate things, and for them, hell is always close. He protested Dennis's act of kissing his ring, but Dennis insisted. Then Arlen shook Dennis's hand and wished him speed of the gods, smiling, but Pena could still see the fear lurking in Dennis's eyes. Dennis wished them the same. Then the young butler turned east, toward the castle, and the two old men headed west, toward the farmstead of one Charles Reachel. Reachel, who raised Anduin huskies for a living, paid the grinding taxes the king had imposed without complaint, and was thus considered loyal. But Pena knew that Reachel was sympathetic to the exiles encamped in the far forests, and had helped others reach them. Pena had never expected to need Reachel's services himself, but the time had come. The farmer's eldest daughter, Naomi, drove Pena and Arlen north on a sled pulled by 12 of the Dogger's strongest huskies. By Wednesday night, they reached the edge of the far forests. "How long to the camp of the exiles?" Pena asked Naomi that night. Naomi cast the thin, evil-smelling cigar she had been smoking into the fire. "Two more days if the skies keep fair. Four more days if it snows. Maybe never if it blizzards." Pena turned in. He drifted off to sleep almost at once. Logic or illogic, he was sleeping better than he had in years. The weather kept clear the next day, and on Friday as well. At dusk of that day, the fourth since Pena and Arlen had parted from Dennis, they reached the small huddle of tents and makeshift wooden huts for which Flag had searched in vain. "Oh, who comes, and can you say the password?" a voice called. It was strong, sturdy, cheerful, and unafraid. Pena recognized it. "It's Naomi Reachel," the girl called. "And the password 2 weeks ago was Tripos. If it's not that now, Ben Stodd, then put an arrow through me and I'll come back and haunt you." Ben appeared from behind a rock, laughing. "I'd not dare meet you as a ghost, Naomi. You're fearsome enough alive." Ignoring this, she turned to Pena. "We've come," she said. "Yes," Pena said. "So I see. And I believe it's well that we have, because something tells me that time has grown short, very short indeed." 89. Peter had the same feeling. By Sunday, 2 days after Pena and Arlen reached the camp of the exiles, his rope would still, by his calculations, finish up 30 feet short of the ground. This meant that when he dangled from the end of it, with his arms fully extended, he would face a drop of at least 21 feet. He knew that he would be wiser by far to go on with his rope for another 4 months, even another 2.
If he dropped from the rope, fell badly, and broke both of his legs so that the plaza guards found him groaning on the cobbles when they made their round of the clock, he would have wasted more than 4 years simply because he did not have the patience to pursue his labor another 4 months. This was logic Pena could have appreciated, but Peter's feeling that he must now hurry was much stronger. Once Pena would have snorted at the idea that feelings could be more trustworthy than logic, but now he might have been less sure. Peter had been having a dream. For almost a week running now, it had played over and over, gradually becoming more distinct. In it he saw Flag, bent over some bright and glowing object. It lit the magician's face a sickly greenish yellow. In this dream, there always came a point when Flag's eyes first widened as if in surprise,